Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's April 18th, 2014. You're listening to the best PokerCast on the interwebs. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
Hey, buddy, you're back.
I am.
It's like every week I say that now.
It's going to happen a lot lately.
Man, you go all over the place and all different modes of transportation as well.
Hey, I've seen home. I know what home looks like. It's the rest of the world I haven't seen.
So what's going on?
Well, you know, hey, we got so much to talk about this week. We finished up that great Ante Up Poker Tour event up at the 101 Casino. All kinds of stuff happened at the Borgata we need to catch up on. But the coolest thing happened yesterday. I woke up in the morning, logged on, and saw that Ante Up Poker Cruises made HuffPost. That's what all the kids that have
those are the cool kids call it. The cool kids call it that.
Yeah, all the rest of you have to call it Huffington Post, but we're allowed to call it HuffPost. So, pretty cool deal. You know, one of those little slide show kind of things where you got to click all the way through and they get all their hits up and, you know, then they can sell ads and stuff, all that kind of cool stuff.
Right.
It was the top 12 ultimate guy getaways. And, of course, Ante Up Poker Cruises on there. I'm sure they didn't rank them in order because we were eighth. Like, yeah. I think we were probably at least in the top 50 percentile. But. And they certainly didn't go in alphabetical order. That would have been awesome.
I know. They didn't want to show favoritism, and we understand that.
Yeah. But I was just happy we were eight, because, you know, when you get, like, 12 or 14 on those slideshows, that's when the, you know, the short attention span web guy kind of, like, you know, gives up.
Or the computer crashes.
Right, exactly. And you got to start all over, and you're like, ah, forget it. I'll just take another BuzzFeed survey. So, you know, eight, I think we have a fair chance of probably half of the people that start the slideshow actually seeing us and potentially clicking on the website and learning a lot more about our Ante Up Poker Cruises and come and join us. And as my wife says, it's an ultimate guy getaway, but plenty of ladies come and have a good time too. So,
absolutely. Of course, I love the address of the story in there. It said, pump up the testosterone. Gotta love that. But no, it's pretty cool to see something like that recognized on such a large scale like that. And I remember waking up and checking my email, and you're like, we're on Huffington Post, baby. I'm like, oh no, what do we do?
You know? No, it's TMZ. You're worried more about TMZ.
Yeah, you're worried about TMZ than Huffington Post. But it was really cool. And everybody that I know, I told everybody I know about it and got a lot of congratulations and stuff. So really cool stuff, man. Really, really proud of that.
Yeah, and some of the other getaways actually are pretty cool, but most of them had
tanks
of what we do on the cruise. You know, there's a lot of drinking and sand and stuff, but yeah, you're right. We've got to find a way to incorporate tanks.
I know.
Because that is freaking awesome.
We're going to come up with another business model, Ante Up Warzone or something. You know,
I don't know if this is coincidence or not, but our Ante Up Poker Cruise manager, Ramsey Sleeman, is actually in Minnesota this week.
Oh.
So maybe he's going to surprise us by buying us a tank.
I got to tell you, it seems like every other photo had a guy crushing something in a tank. So, you know, I don't know what we would do. I guess we could, you know, put chipsets and poker tables out for guys to ride their tanks over and stuff. But it's still an honor just to be in this top 12. It's pretty crazy stuff.
Oh, absolutely. Super well-read site. Actually, great content as well, too, in general. So check it out. Go to Huffington Post and just look for the 12 Ultimate Guy getaways. And then remember, go to AnteUpCruises.com and book. You know, we've got four more cruises coming up this year and our Port Canaveral one this summer, which, reminder for all of you folks that are teachers and have kids and stuff, you've been whining at us for years now to have a poker cruise in the dead of summer. We did our part. You got to do your part.
Yeah, you got to hold up your end of the bargain, or we're never going to do it again. But the real reason why I welcomed you back, though, was because the Ante Up Poker Tour was going on last week. And some pretty cool stuff happened. I'm real excited about it.
Yeah, this is just a fantastic event. You know, you can't win them all, but we certainly win our fair share of them, I think. And this one was definitely a winner. We had such a great time out at 101. I can't talk enough about just how wonderful the entire staff was there. I mean, by the time I left, I knew, you know, half the dealers' names, all the bartenders' names.
Of course.
The tournament director ran an amazing, amazing tournament, and the whole staff there just treated us so great, and not just us, but the players. And I thought one of the most telling things was our new good friends at the Hold'em Radio, Dan and Harold, were hired to come out and broadcast live there for the last three events, including the main event. Great guys. Had a lot of fun finally getting to meet them and being on their show during it. And I actually interviewed them for our story, and they said the perfect thing, I think Dan said, is like, you know, hey, this room just treats these players so well. We've talked to so many players who have never been to this room, and every single one of them said they would come back in a minute. And he said that's not insignificant when you're talking about all the poker rooms they could go here, all the poker rooms they're going to have to drive past to get to this casino, and the willing that they're willing to do all that to come back here just shows how great the staff was in running this event. So certainly not the largest event in the poker world ever, but for a 10-table room, we blew the doors off there and had a lot of fun and met a lot of people, and looking forward to getting back there if they have us.
Cool, very cool.
And really, you know, I just kind of like, you know, kind of poked our podcast listeners there for not booking the summer cruise that they asked for. But I do want to give a shout out to all the folks that when they tell us they're going to come to an Antioch Poker Tour event, they show up. Met at least half a dozen listeners that came up and talked, said hi to me and stuff. And our listeners crushed this thing. We had two of them, at least two of them, that cashed in the main event. Both extremely excited to actually even had the time to get up there and play, and then go ahead and cash. And the funny thing is, I was talking to one, Ryan. I got there before the tournament started one day, and he was sitting at the table, and I was just talking to some other folks. And then he introduced myself, and he's like, "This is so cool. I listen to you on the car all the time." And now you're standing right here. And he went on to cash, so very excited for Ryan and all the other listeners that came out and played and had a good time. And, you know, and that certainly helps us going forward to let folks know that, you know, hey, we're bringing in players that they weren't going to have unless Andy Up was part of it. So we really do appreciate you not only listening every week, but getting your car and come out and meeting us when you get the opportunity.
Absolutely. That's so huge for us. And plus, you know, it's fun to meet the listeners and stuff. I can't remember how many times, you know, you're in a poker room and then you're talking and then someone walks up to you and says, "I recognize your voice." And then there you go. There, you know, somebody came out and because they knew you were going to be in town, but they didn't know what you looked like or whatever, so they went to the place you were going to be, and they heard your voice, and that's so, you know, it's so cool to actually hang out with the listeners and stuff, and of course, you know, put an event like this together, so awesome.
Yeah, and they remember the show so well, too, you know, so they're like, "Hey, remember that one where you did this?" And sometimes I have to struggle. Most times I do, but sometimes I get it. But just the fact that they're so passionate about it and you know, it's such a part of their life. It's so cool to be reminded of that we, you know, started that 4,000 years ago back in the elevator ding room.
You know, we get to the end of the show and you have the time to say, "I can't remember if it was this show we were talking about it or not." And that's true. I mean, I could literally find those audio clips like three or four times in the last couple of months. So for you to remember shows from years past, that's remarkable. Absolutely true story.
Oh man, I do want to give another shout out to the 101 for the structures for these tournaments. You know, one of the their players there actually sat down with them and helped them design them. Incredibly player friendly structures, and it's really hard to get those these days, I think, because, you know, again, our poker economics lessons for the listener. Rooms don't make money on tournaments generally. They make money on cash games, and the tournaments they do to get people in and out into the cash games. You know, don't get me wrong, they do make some money on tournaments, but ultimately they want to get you in the cash game. So for a room to really go crazy on structures and make really slow, deep events, there's not a lot of financial incentive for them to do that. So when you see a room that says, you know what, hey, we want to give the players a huge value for their money, then I think they need to be recognized for that. Certainly the main event structure people just raved about. I mean, it was 30-minute levels to start with, but to 40 minutes on day two and 60 minutes at the final table. and had it not ended up in a chop, which we'll talk about here soon, it could still be going on. I mean, that's how good the structure was for play. So.
And you got to remind everybody, this is a $400 tournament.
Yeah, exactly. It's a $400 tournament in a 10-table card room. So, I mean, it's not a room that really can afford to do structures like that. But they've made a commitment that they really want to become a tournament destination in the San Francisco area. And when you make that kind of commitment, it's good to see you back it up by doing stuff that is going to make sure that people come and play.
Absolutely.
And here's an interesting thing I want to talk to you about, too. So when I was talking to the guy that helped design the structures, it was interesting to me because I played the four lead-up events, right? I never played the main event, but I played the four lead-up events, and all of them, the tournament started at the 5,100 level.
Okay.
And I hadn't really seen that before. I think the World Series main event probably starts at 5,100, maybe even 100, 200. But most tournaments I play, it's always the 2,550, right?
Yeah.
And so I thought that was a little odd. But so when I was talking to him, I didn't even get a chance to ask him. He went immediately into it and said, you know, hey, I want to get rid of some of those unnecessary levels early on and give more play towards the end of the tournament when it really matters. Now, I've heard giving more play to the end of the tournament where it really matters all the time. That's, you know, a hallmark of yeah. Really good structure writers. You know, you don't want to be gambling, you know, with 10 big blinds, the entire table of 10 big blinds when he gets down to the final table, right?
Right.
But I had never heard anybody actually specifically see the unnecessary levels, and the more I thought about it, I think he's right. So I don't know. I'm curious what you think. I'm curious what our listeners think. Is a 2550 level really necessary?
Well, you know,
when you're starting with 10,000 units or something like that.
I guess it's hard to say. It depends on the length of the levels. Like in this case, it was 30 minutes, which is pretty decent. And the other thing too is, a lot of times I've read articles and listened to interviews with people in pros, especially like Dan Negreanu and things like that, where they say, you know, hey, a lot of chips are great, but if you skip a level or two, then it's like you don't have that many chips. So I don't know which levels are unimportant or whatever.
It's a tough question to answer. Yeah. I should have put you on the spot there because it does depend on how the rest of the structure is.
Yeah.
If you're starting at 5,100 and you immediately go to, you know, you keep doubling for the next four levels, then that's ridiculous at that point. But let's say the structure from there on out is slower than you would normally get. You know, maybe it's, you know, start at 5,100 and you go to 75, 150 rather than skipping straight to 100, 200. So if you add another level in at some point and take out some of those really early ones, then I think it's probably not that big a deal. I think it's just kind of jarring to people because you're used to sitting down and just, hey, putting 50 out through the big blind in the first hand.
Right.
And not seeing it. But I think the idea is kind of interesting to think about, the fact that, you know, when you've got 10,000 units, do you really need to play a 2550 at that point? I mean, you're raising, what, you know, 100 to 150 pre-flop, you know, and you've got a gajillion big bets. So it almost seems kind of meaningless, I think.
Well, think about this, though. I mean, there have been times where at 2550 and you have 10,000 chips in front of you, where at the end people are making bets that are big enough that if you re-raise once, you're all in.
True.
I mean, it does happen. So, I mean, I'm not saying there's no significance in that level or that there's a lot of significance in that level. It just, I guess it really does depend on what you said on the other stuff later on. If they're adding another level, or if the lengths of the levels in an hour are going to double, or something, you know, just all these other intangibles, that if you look at those things, then perhaps, yeah, the 2550 is sort of meaningless. It is a nice stepping off point when you're just getting started in a tournament, you're seeing how people play, you can sort of experiment and start, and not have to worry about, let's say if you start at 50 and 100, and then somebody makes it 300, another guy re-raises to 900, now you've already bet 10% of your stack on the first hand.
True.
You know what I mean? And so it's like, okay, I didn't even get a chance to really understand how this table plays. I didn't get to play loose, or, you know, I'm already in it. I'm already into a 10% of my starting stack hand, and I haven't even gotten to have my cup of coffee yet. So right. I guess it just depends on the type of player you are. If you're a type of player that likes to splash around and get to know the players first and do it at a cheap cost, then maybe you want to cherish that first level. But if it's something that they're going to reward you for, you know, being patient and taking a long time to play and giving you more minutes per round and stuff, then maybe that first round is kind of a waste. But I don't know, it's just so ubiquitous now, it's hard to imagine changing it.
And it probably also depends on the players. If you get players in that really study the structure, which, you know, on a lot of $400 tournaments, you don't.
Yeah.
I think players really understand that structure. I think it's less likely you're going to get that 300, 900 pre-flop kind of raise and then all in on the flop kind of, because people know that the structure is going to be slow enough that they don't need to gamble right now.
Yeah, that's true, too.
That's really where it happens. I mean, pre-flop, and we had a lot of conversations about pre-flop, you know, people, you know, shoving ace-king pre-flop, you know, early in the tournament. I mean, why? You know, right. why do you want to flip for that? You know, this is supposed to be a game of skill, and it's just luck at this point. So.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, well, let's get back to the event, too. This is one of the most interesting finishes to a tournament I've seen. Certainly, I've seen 100,000 chops in my life, and so the final three did chop here. But it was really interesting to watch the discussion. So there are two really well-established players, two players with circuit rings, and then one of the local players was it was a really good player too, by the way. It doesn't matter that he doesn't have a circuit ring yet. He probably will at some point. But so good play going on, and massive pot. It was probably, I want to say it was close to 400,000, but it was at least 300,000 because that's what the river call was. And really got everybody about even at that point. Mm-hmm. And the guy that lost that hand just said, hey, you know, hey, I'll make a one-time offer to you guys. We'll do a three-way chop. And, you know, usually you got this, I don't know, let me see how it goes. But the other two seemed to be interested in it. And then what was interesting is Sean Roberts, who I've met before. He lives near Thunder Valley, where we've had 1,000 events, it seems like. The winner of this event got a seat in their 1650 buy-in Ante Up World Championship main event coming up in August, and that is literally like he could walk from his house to the Thunder Valley, right? So,
right.
So the seat was really important to him. So immediately he's like, you know, hey, as long as I get the seat, I think I'm down with it. And the guy that proposed was like, you know, hey, I don't care about the seat. You can have the seat if you want. So then the other guy was like talking. He's like, well, I kind of would like the bracelet. And they're like, hey, you can have the bracelet. We don't care about the bracelet. So at that point, everybody seemed happy, right?
Right.
And they're like, all right, done. I'm like, and then, so I'm in the background. I'm like, hey, by the way, guys, we can't put three people on the cover. One of you has got to be on the cover. And they totally forgot about that. and so they're like, hey, well, let's play one hand for it, one hand blind. And that's exactly what they did, and Sean Roberts got dealt ace-deuce. I mean, everybody had three crappy hands. It wasn't like anybody got pocket aces, you know. And he flopped an eight, won the hand, and then immediately it's like, hey, Chris, the one guy that didn't get anything on top, he's like, you know what, you can have the cover. When does that happen in poker?
I don't know, but you said ace-deuce instead of eight-deuce. So
oh, sure.
I think you always do, so just want to clarify, because ace-deuce is pretty good three-handed when you're going for the title. But no, that's amazing. The guy wins it and then gives it up anyway. It just sounds like a bunch of great guys.
Yeah, so I mean, everybody, there were three things of bonus stuff in the tournament. Each of them took one of them, seemed happy with it, and they split the money down the middle. And then they sat around afterwards for photos and, you know, chummed it up with each other. So, and I guess that's the other thing, too. It was amazing to me. I spent there all week. I played four tournaments. I played a ton of cash. And there was only one time the entire trip I was out there in that room that I saw anybody lose their temper at the table anywhere. And it was just a brief one, too. It wasn't that big a deal. So, I mean, it's just such a nice place to play when you go in. And people are there having a good time playing poker and not having to feel like they got to be this macho times seven at the table and just be a jerk to people, right? So, I mean, and I think it just crystallized at the end when the chop discussion went so beautifully, and then, you know, somebody gives up the cover for free, and I don't know. It was just a really cool event.
Cool.
I did do really well in the tournaments. I almost made the final table event one, and then flamed down the rest of them. So let's not talk about tournaments, but did play cash for quite a while. Ended up not doing really well at the cash tables either, but that's a fun story. So, you know, I'm one of these guys that doesn't really pay attention to the promotions, particularly when I'm in a new room. You know, I don't even think about it at that time. So they at one point, I had pocket tens, and I was playing limit, like 4-8 limit. And flop came ace-ace-ace. And so I felt pretty confident, so I bet it strong. And eventually everybody folded, and I flipped my cards up face up, you know, just because, you know, that's what you want to do, right?
Yeah.
And there was, like, this quiet, muffled conversation at the table, right? And then the dealer, I was in the one seat, and the dealer kind of leans over. She's like, you know, our bad B qualifier is aces full beaten.
No.
And I'm like, oh, okay, I didn't know that. And she's like, I don't think it really wouldn't have mattered. And I'm like, no, actually it wouldn't, because I had aces full of 10. If anybody had an ace or kings or queens or jacks, anything that could beat me, they're not folding there because I'm the aggressor, right? It's different than when you're raising somebody that's betting. But it's funny that people just immediately thought, oh, my God, why is he betting this? Why is he going to give up on $50,000? And it really didn't make sense, right? So then they're doing this thing like every, I think it was every 4 hours they switched off and on. It might have been 2 hours. But they would do a high hand for that period. And that person, I forget how much money they won. And then the next period of time, 2 hours, 4 hours, whatever it is, they did aces cracked. And if your aces cracked, you got $100, which is nice, right? And then they had one of those wheels where you get to spin it, and you could win anywhere from $25 to $500 in addition on the wheel, right? Completely forgot about this, right? Because I don't play it. So I had pocket aces. I was betting strong all the way to the end. Went runner, runner, deuces. Guy turns over, queen, deuce. Man, thank you. Thank you for being in this hand, sir. Cat pre-flop. And normally I just would have mocked and just shook my head, but for some reason I just flipped my cards up to show everybody my misery, right? Because everybody likes that, right? And everybody's like, immediately, like, everybody's like, aces cracked! I'm like, oh my gosh, I forgot! I mean, I would have thrown away, and I spun the wheel, I got 50 more bucks. So I got 150 bucks out, and I would have thrown 150 bucks away because I wasn't paying attention to the promotions.
Man, I can't believe you're only the publisher of a magazine that only promotes promotions and tells you that don't ever, you know, walk into a poker room without knowing what's going on in the room that day. You should have donated that money to charity.
Oh, I did. There's lots of folks at the 101 Casino that are throwing that money right now.
That is true. Sorry.
It was only on the table for a brief moment.
A little salt in the wound, inadvertently.
So the funny thing was, is about three hands later, literally three hands later, I got a hand, and I'm betting it. Guys just calling me, betting call. And at the end, I think I won this turn of the hand, and then he turns over aces. I'm like, all right, I lost that. And he got mad at me. He was upset that he won the hand.
This was the tiny blow-up you mentioned earlier?
No, it wasn't actually. Hey, there was me blowing up on the inside. I'm like, dude, what are you upset about? So in his mind, he had done the math, which is faulty in my opinion, and deduced that he was going to win more money. Like his ace is getting cracked, so he was just check-calling the entire way.
Yeah.
And this is the fallacy in that, in my opinion, is that your aces are going to win more often than not. And he ended up winning a $30 pot instead of more had he played it strong. And then maybe he would have got lucky, unlucky at the end like I did.
Right.
He got his aces cracked at the end and made a bunch of money anyhow. So I think it's so interesting that he's upset. There's nobody happy about this hand. I'm upset that he slow played aces and I lost the pot. And he's upset because he won with aces and didn't get the aces cracked. Poker's a crazy game sometimes, isn't it?
Aces suck. I don't ever want to see them again.
I've just never seen that. Where everybody at the table is upset with a hand.
That's hilarious.
All right, then final story before we move on to all this Borgata news we're talking about. You know, we've all been slow rolled before, right?
Yep.
Doesn't feel good, right?
No.
This was the first time I've ever been slow rolled by chips.
What?
I know, it sounds funny, right?
Uh-huh.
All right, so here's the situation. Again, it's 4-8 limit already. We're betting. I get to the river, and I think, I forget the exact action, but I believe I bet this gentleman raised me. I quickly called, shoved my, made the call of the chips, turned my hand face up, you know, because I'm one of these guys in limit. I want to get as many hands per hour, right? I don't play these games where I'm staring down. Who goes first?
Yeah, yeah.
Screw that. Just throw your cards over, sir. I turned my cards over right away. Literally, it takes this guy about 20 hours to count out his call, his raise. You know, he's the one that raised. I already called before he gets all his chips in the pot, and he's making them all nice and even, and he's putting one chip at a time on the stacks. And the whole time, my hand is exposed on the table, right?
Yeah.
Action's done, and I'm like, all right, so I apparently won this thing. I mean, I had a good hand, but not the nuts, and so I'm like, all right. There's no reason this guy is going to be this meticulous about putting these chips in the pot if the dealer's just going to shove them right back at him, right?
Right.
So he clearly lost. So then, so he gets done, you know, then he calls in the city zoning board to come in and make sure the chips are perfectly aligned.
He's got the level and everything out there.
Exactly. Yeah, you know, they sign off on it, you know, pat him on the back. Very good job stacking your chips, sir. And he opens his hand and he has like a flush and wins the pot. And I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. And then every other table's like, I thought for sure you won that because he was stacking his chips. Why was he stacking his chips? I'm like, I don't know. I just got slow rolled by chips. How hard is that?
Slow rolled by chips. What are these people? I mean, what are they thinking? I mean, was that, did that give him pleasure? Did not winning the pot enough, enough of pleasure for him?
And here's the thing. As in most cases with slow rollers, I don't think he meant to. He had obviously been enjoying the various draft beers that are on tap at the 101 Casino.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He was inebriated, but he was happy, let's say, right?
Uh-huh.
And he also wasn't a very sophisticated player either, right? So it's one of these things where I'm kind of upset about it, but to me it's a funny story now, but... I think if he was a more sophisticated player, he would have realized what he was doing. I think just in the moment, he's like, oh, I got to put my chips in and make my call, and blah, 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 and not realizing, oh, hey, look, that idiot in one seat that called me has got a crappy hand. I got to beat. I'm going to turn it over and save myself some time. So I don't think he meant the slow roll, but, at the end of the day, he did. And I got slow rolled by chips. That's my new story.
He probably, maybe, and I'm just going to give the benefit of the doubt because everybody was so nice there, but maybe he was thinking that he wasn't looking at your cards, and he probably lost a hand, and then he was just so focused on what he was doing that he hadn't really paid attention that he was winning. I don't know. Who knows? I wasn't there.
Yeah,
but
it was
sounds
also
pretty
one of those
dubious
things
to me.
When he got done, then he picked his cards up and and flipped them over and then kind of looked at my hand and looked back at his hand. I honestly don't think that he even realized he had won at that point. He probably forgot what he had, or I don't know. Which makes it even more painful that you're sitting there watching chips, you know. And you can even take these videos and put it in slow motion and do it as slowly as this guy was. And then when he's done, then he's like, what's he have? Well, he's got a straight. I got a flush. Does a flush beat the straight? Yes, sir. Take your chips.
So, and you would never be accused of exaggerating anything, right?
No, of course not.
Not like 5 seconds ago you didn't say literally 100,000 chops you've seen in your
I never tell yarns.
Yeah, you never lie at all. So I'm sure this guy was moving at a snail's pace. Literally. All right, Borgata news.
No, literally, snail's going to move chips into that pot.
Let's move on to the Borgata
news. They could be nudging them with their little heads and leaving that little snail trail, and it would have been faster. Absolutely.
We have been waiting about 3 months to find out what was going to happen to that Borgata tournament, and where they had some guy inserted some counterfeit chips.
No idea.
Yeah, I don't know. So they finally came out with their ruling, and everyone's getting a refund.
Almost everybody
getting a refund. So I have that story. I have it up here on our system, and because of this too, they've instituted a new chip into their system too. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But I guess it was 2,100 players or so, right, are going to get a refund.
Yeah, there are a gajillion players in this tournament. Again, I'm not exaggerating. I think there literally were a gajillion. It sounds like if you had the story up, but my understanding was that the final 27, when the tournament was halted, split the remaining prize
pool. Yeah, for 19 grand each.
And got nothing extra other than that, which is fine. And then the players that already cashed, I believe, got their cash, which is fine. And then I think it was the players that didn't cash and came in contact with the guy in some form or fashion.
Right, and they can keep track of where he was and everything. Is what
exactly. Yeah. So there are some players in the tournament that they determined were not adversely affected by this guy, and therefore were not entitled to any kind of refund. But 2,100 or so were, and that's a pretty big deal.
Yeah, that's huge. I do have to wonder how they feel that not everybody in this field was at some... I mean, if you're knocked out in the first 5 minutes and you weren't anywhere near him, that's one thing, but... How far back did they go to determine who?
Well, that's just exactly it. You know? It probably is like things like that. That just you were out before this guy even sat down or what you know. So, and I'm sure those people that didn't get anything out of this are probably huffing mad right now. And some people could probably say that they're justified in that. I would not be one of them. I would think that it sounds like this thing has gone on forever, right? It's been several months now.
Yeah.
In investigating, so they certainly, you know, were very exhaustive in figuring it out. And so if you're one of the players that didn't get anything, then I would probably be upset. But it certainly sounds like they didn't do this willy nilly. They actually spent a lot of time and effort trying to figure out who actually was affected, who wasn't. But and certainly, I think they probably erred on the side of caution, is what my guess is, for 2,100 players. You know, I mean, that's. I think it might be interesting to go through the anatomy of a tournament, which is what they did, and just really see how players are affected by it and what they came up with. But I would think it's probably the non-players that were really adversely affected. It was probably way less than 2,100, and they just erred on the side of caution.
This cost the Borgata a fortune.
Oh yeah,
I mean, ultimately, it's going to save them money because they don't want them to cost their entire tournament business or poker business. But I mean, think about 2,100 people getting, you know, $560 back plus paying everybody that had to get paid on top of that, because the money that they were using to fund that those prize pools was coming out of that $2,100 entrance.
Sure.
Now they're getting all their money back out of the Borgata pocket. So. Some serious money there.
Yeah, and I think it's important to note, too, I believe, in the story that the Gaming Enforcement Board actually made a point to say that they did not believe that Borgata was complicit at all in this.
Right.
Or really did anything wrong at all. So the fact that the property did, in the Gaming Enforcement's eyes, nothing wrong, but still, you know, pay back all this money, I think, is pretty noble.
I mean, that's almost $1.2 million. Right there.
Yeah, just because it could be easy for them to say, hey, we were cleared of this, and, you know, hey, sorry this happened, but we've taken steps to make sure it doesn't happen again, and we'll pay out the money to the last 27 people, and the rest of you guys, the cash, that's great, and sorry, folks. Yeah. And they didn't, so.
That's really a high road sort of, you know, thing to do, and good for them. I mean, and within the story, you can see the guys talking about, you know, hey, we're the leader of poker in this area, we need to do what's right to and that's why we get into now. We're going to get into the poker chip thing, they did the right thing. They stood by their players, and now no one is going to feel, you know, slighted really, because they went so
legitimately slighted. They should not.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I mean, this was definitely the high road, and hats off to Borgata for really doing it the right way. And I mean, that's some serious money that they had to pay out right there. I mean, every dime that they would have made in the tournament is gone. Plus, they had to pay everybody who was going to get paid with that money, and then they had to pay out almost $1.2 million on their own. That's a lot of cash, and I know they can afford it because of Borgata, but that's not the point. You know, it's the right thing to do.
Right.
Pretty cool.
So we talked about the new chips, and they introduced them in their latest tournament, which began this month, and more intricate, more colors, and have an authentication element that can be checked under ultraviolet light.
Yep.
Which sounds cool, but I've watched way too many of those Dateline specials where they take the ultraviolet lights in hotel rooms, and I am not sure I want to see what's on these poker chips. But
or on people.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's pretty gross.
But no, it's good that they did. I mean, I shouldn't say it's good. I mean, it was almost a necessity that they had to come up with something, right?
Yeah.
We talked about this on the show before, too. Didn't necessarily go to the RFID lengths that we discussed a couple weeks ago. But certainly doing something to make players feel more secure there. And let's not forget the fact that it's not cheap to buy a whole new set of tournament chips.
No.
Particularly for a property the size of Borgata.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You're looking at, you know, economy of scale. I mean, even for with a good deal, you're probably looking at 40 cents a chip, maybe 30 cents if you really negotiate.
And these are high tech chips we're talking about too.
Exactly.
Yeah, we're not talking about the regular standard ones that cost that.
Right.
So.
You add all the security features in there, now you're bumping up 60, 70, 80, maybe more than $1 a chip, depending on how much security is in there. And, you know, we're talking millions of chips. You know, so this is certainly a big expenditure, both in refunding the tournament entry fees and buying new chips.
Yeah.
That they did to restore confidence.
Yeah, this one guy players. Cost them millions of dollars.
Yeah, exactly. You know, hey, I don't want to toot my own horn, but let's go back to the initial discussion about this, and that was one of the things I mentioned, is that why players should be so upset about this kind of stuff, is that when it happens, then it's going to make these properties pay a lot of money to make sure it doesn't happen again, and obviously there hasn't been any announcement that they're going to increase rakes or anything like that. But I guarantee you at some point, Borgata is going to look for ways to make that money back, and it's going to be on the players. From the players at some point down the road. And so really, we should all be extremely upset at this not-yet-convicted guy that caused all those problems, because we're all going to pay for it. And not just there. I mean, again, this story resonates across the country, and there's a lot of poker rooms that are looking probably to do the same thing to make sure that their tournaments are chips are more secure, and hopefully some of them are doing them during their normal tournament chip replacement schedule and not just going out buying new chips now. But it's possible they're going out and buying new chips right now, and that cost is going to be passed on to players wherever you play.
And like I've mentioned in the past before, is that, and you know that there are going to be gaming boards all over the country that are taking note of this.
Absolutely.
And they're going to say to their state, you know, hey, within 3 years or whatever it is, you need to start to filter out the old chips and start bringing in these sort of new high-tech chips with the UV light or whatever. And so it's going to end up costing the entire poker economy now more money because we can't get people to on the level to play poker with us.
What I think would be cool is, like, at every break, they just turn all the lights out in the Borgata.
Yeah.
And put a big black light on.
Yeah.
And then look for the bad chips.
People start bringing in velvet paintings. Start dancing in 70s gear and clogs. Put down the strobe light. That'd be awesome.
Wouldn't it?
It'd be 70s night at the Borgata.
Or better yet, you know, you're just sitting at the table and the security guard comes over, spot check, he has a little wand thing. You're the middleman trying to decide whether you call your pocket aces, and the guy's like, excuse me.
You know what's funny is that's pretty much normal noises that you normally make in everyday life anyway. You're not even making funny noises.
And I don't know why an ultraviolet light would actually make noise.
I know, I don't either. You're scaring me a little
bit. It's an audio show, though, so, you know, I gotta do what I can here. On the final thing, too, man, it's been a rough year for Phil Ivey here with the whole Baccarat thing, right? So, you know, he was suing that casino in England or Europe or somewhere across the pond, right, for withholding his winnings. And now Borgata, you know, as if they have nothing else going on right now, is suing Phil Ivey for wins that they say are ill-begotten. Because he was using, in their words, I guess I don't know how to really say it. They were betraying the trust of Borgata. It might be the way to go. They, you know, he played high limit baccarat. He asked for all these crazy requests out of the scope of superstition, and they say that it wasn't superstition. It was the way the whole operation worked. He was getting help from his. Guy that was hanging out with him, or a woman.
Right, a spokesman or into the dealer to help the dealer do what he wanted him to do. And it was something like, they called it edge sorting.
Yeah.
And the way that they were making
some imperfection in the cards that he could tell.
Right, he could tell what was coming.
Dealt. And if they dealt it normally, the way they would normally deal it to players, that you wouldn't be able to see it. So, the Borgata claims that this is the same thing that, very similar to what he was doing.
Crockford's.
Yeah, the other property. Yeah. So, obviously not guilty or anything right now. It's just a lawsuit, and we'll see how it plays out. But
like almost $10 million too. That he.
Oh yeah, forgot. Absolutely. Amazing amount of money, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, it's tough. Once you get the accusation one place, and then you get the second place, then it gets tougher to wash the stink off. So
it's interesting that. And I don't know. I don't play these games. You know, I don't gamble like that. And so I don't really know the nuances or the protocols of things. But you would think that with the eye in the sky and the pit boss and all that stuff, that even though he's Phil Ivey, when somebody's sitting down and making $10 million on you, that somebody's going to go over there and watch that game, and then he's going to see the dealer dealing it funny. And then he's going to say, hey, why are you dealing it that way? And he's going to say, well, Phil Ivey asked me to. Oh, the same Phil Ivey who won $9.6 million off of us? Let's go back to dealing the way it's supposed to be dealt, and I don't care about his superstition. If he wants to leave, let him leave. We're losing $9 million on this guy already, or something like that. I mean,
yeah, well, I haven't read the whole report, so maybe it's in the report this way, but I'm going to guess that's probably the genesis of where this lawsuit came from, was that, you know, obviously somebody's going to watch any player that's wagering above the table minimum. I think he negotiated $50,000 per hand to start with, which was higher than they normally do, and then eventually talked him into $100,000 a hand. Yeah. So obviously, any gambler there's going to be scrutiny there, right? And then particularly a celebrity like Phil Ivey, I think there's going to be more scrutiny. So I'm going to guess, I could be wrong, that, that there was that scrutiny, and you know, you don't immediately want to jump in and accuse somebody of cheating, particularly somebody that's playing a house band game that you're going to eventually win from if right. they're on the up and up, right? Yeah. So you want to give some time to really figure out whether they're doing that or not. And there's a reason these casinos allow players to do these superstition things, because, again, they know they're going to win, right? Yeah. So, yeah, why does it matter if, you know, if he only wants purple deck cards? It doesn't matter. They're still going to win. So, but I think eventually, I think that it was just the watching and watching and watching is when things didn't add up, and then you factor in what's happening over there, and then, you know, just waited at the point where they felt like it was time to... to let him know that his play wasn't wanted anymore, and then got to this point. But you could be wrong, and maybe they just weren't as vigilant for first couple months, and then got vigilant. But I think more to that point, though. I mean, how can you imagine that you're the kind of player playing at that level and a celebrity, and not think that you're going to get that scrutiny, right?
Yeah, it's very interesting to see how this is going to pan out. You know, I mean, especially when you're under. Well, although it was 2012 when this happened, I guess, so maybe he wasn't under investigation at the time, so he wouldn't have worried about being caught of anything if he was doing something wrong.
True.
Yeah. You know, at that point, but yeah, jeez. Well, speaking of when you should have called the floor, here's our call to floor. Find yourself in a situation at your favorite poker room or home game and not sure what the proper ruling should have been? Email us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com and we'll have Antiup Poker Tour Tournament Director Sam Minatello tell you how you would have ruled. This comes from Nick in California. He says, we are in a $220 tournament in a Northern California card room. It limbs to the big blind, who raises a 300. The small blind immediately announces he's shoving for 3,500. The dealer reminds him it's not his turn to act. The other two players in the hand fold, and the small blind proceeds to fold, too. And the big blind is awarded the pot. Since action didn't change, shouldn't the small blind have been required to move all in?
First of all, I want to say I finally got to meet Nick this week. He came over to the 101 event.
Cool.
Yeah, well, great guy, and he made a pretty deep run in the main event. I don't believe he cashed, but made a good run. So it's always good to see listeners, and that was one of them we saw. Cool. And to his question, Sam says, out-of-turn action is binding unless action in front of that player has changed. What constitutes a change in action? A raise from another player in between the current action, and the out-of-turn action constitutes a change in action. Players who fold or just call the current action do not constitute a change in action. Therefore, the small blind was obligated to his all-in wager of $3,500.
Yeah, it seems pretty cut and dried. I'm not sure why that didn't transpire there. That's kind of weird.
Yeah, it's kind of unfortunate that happened because even non-TDA compliant guys like us would have no problem answering that question.
Yeah,
but obviously there are ones that are far more complicated. Doesn't seem like it, and Sam confirms what we thought.
All right, we have O'Malley's move being completed today. Always good when that happens, so we're going to have to refresh our memories here. Here comes part one.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. After losing over half of our bankroll in that game we weren't comfortable with, we're back in our original 1-2 cash game, and we've bought in for 200. Thankfully, we're up a buy-in and a half and currently sit with 500. We're at a full nine-handed table that is pretty timid. A lot of limpers pre-flop, and a lot of opportunities to push people off hands and steal the blinds. In this hand, everyone folds to the hijack, who limps, and we look down at the ace of spades, queen of clubs. With a big stack, a tight, aggressive image, and the mantra of table captain, we're going to make a raise here. The table standard is 4x, but we account for the limper and make a $10 bet. Everyone else folds back around to the hijack, who calls. She is an extremely timid player. We've seen her limp with big pairs, and she's a calling station, who will pay off bets with anything decent. She flopped the nut flush and called a player down all the way before raising him out on the river. She's doubled her original buy-in and sits with around 200. There's about $20 in the pot, and the flop comes down the ace of diamonds, 10 of diamonds, 10 of clubs. This is a pretty good hand, and really knowing her range, the only hand she might possibly have that could beat us is ace-king. There aren't many tens I could see her holding here. We put in a bet of $12 after she checks. She does some thinking and then calls. The turn is the 3 of diamonds. The hijack checks almost immediately, and once again, we put in another bet. With roughly $40 in there, we make it $25 to go. Once again, our opponent thinks for a while and calls. Interesting. With about $90 in the pot, the river is the nine of spades. And once again, our opponent checks. So, are we checking behind? Or is this a value betting situation? What's the move?
Against calling stations, I'm usually going to check behind in this situation, since I'm always going to get called anyhow, right?
Mm.
That's why they're calling stations. They're not folding stations. But in this hand, I think only five hands beat us. I was incorrect on my math to begin with, but I think it's five now, right?
Uh-huh.
And I think two are unlikely the way the action went. Mally hasn't indicated that this calling station likes to check raise on the river. So because of that, I don't see much downside to putting in a bet of, I don't know, $50 or so.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason is I don't fear a raise, so I'm essentially setting my own price. If she has a hand that beats us, great. Hey, good for her. Taps the table. Good job. But if she has a weaker hand and calls, which is just as likely, Chaco went up for the good guys, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, you know, he was mentioning she likes to limp with big pairs, so, I mean, she could just be calling because she's afraid of the ace, you know, with something like Jack-Jack or 9-9.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I agree, a value bet here of 35 or 50 is in order, so.
Let's hope she doesn't have 9-9, though. I'll be
back. Yeah, no, but I mean, you never know, so. Let's see what happens.
Hello again. I don't see her checking a monster here. Honestly, the only hand I can see her checking with here that has us beat is Ace-King. But there are many hands that I feel she could have that we beat, and that she would call a reasonable bet with. Queens, jacks, perhaps eights or sevens? A bit more unlikely would be ace-queen or ace-jack. My money's on queens or jacks, as we have seen her limp preflop with queens tonight. I think this is a value betting situation. It's unlikely we're beat here. We make it $30, and our opponent sighs and calls. We turn over our ace-queen, and she mucks queens face-up. Wow, nice flop. Until next time, I am Malcolm O'Malley saying, play your strong hand strong, pre-flop. If you let someone else take control of the hand, you might end up losing quite a bit of money. I hope to see you on the felt.
What's great about calling stations is you almost always get paid off. And what's bad about calling stations is that you never know whether you're ahead or not. So I think big bets are always rarely the right play against these folks, because it's always going to cost you money one way or the other. Either you don't get paid off, or you get raised, or you lose the big hand. So it seems like O'Malley found the right price here. I'm curious, though, whether she would have called the 50 that I was going to bet.
I agree with you, though. I mean, I think this was probably played the best way and got the maximum. She probably still would have called 50, because it's not that much more.
It sounds like she's smirked or something, right?
Yeah.
If you make that kind of facial contusion.
Contusion? Contortion? Contusion's a cut.
Well, yeah. I mean, your face gets cut because the ace came. The ace is really sharp. It's got that point. Facial contusion.
Oh, man.
I saw that movie Bad Words when I was in Petaluma, so I'm trying out these big words that I don't really understand. So
there you go. That makes sense.
But anyhow, so if you make that facial tick,
yeah.
How's that? Is that better?
That's good.
Is she ticking? Can I say she's ticking?
Like a time bomb, buddy.
I think she might flinch at the extra $20 there. Right? So
maybe.
I'm going to guess that we'll never know, but I'm going to guess that he probably picked the right price, and I probably picked the wrong price. But
yeah, O'Malley certainly had this lady's number, knowing how she plays and everything, so he probably did bet the right amount. So nice job on him, and always good when we win a hand. I don't like when O'Malley loses. I want him to make enough money that he wants to keep doing this with us.
It's time for Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast at antiupmagazine.com. This week's sponsor is tournamentbutton.com, which offers a variety of home dealer buttons with timers built right into them. You can even customize them with your own photo or logo and ask about the AntiUp logo version. And be sure to use code AntiUp for free shipping. This week's hand comes from Justin Harrow.
Okay.
And a longtime listener of the show, he says, but first-time writer.
We get a lot of those.
Yeah, it's amazing we're still getting them after 47 years doing this, right?
Literally 47 years.
Literally, yeah, absolutely. he said this happened, the hand happened about a week ago in a home game. We're playing 10-handed 1-3 no limit. Actually, I think it's kind of interesting in a home game you play 1-3 no limit. I mean, I know why casinos do it, because you get slightly better rake, even though players don't really notice it. But in home game, you know, why not play 1-2, right?
Well, maybe they're prepping for the playing those games.
I mean, hey, they can play whatever they want. I don't care.
Yeah,
I wonder what the genesis of that was. You know, we want to play. You want to play 1-2? No, let's play 1-3. Okay. His stacks are quite deep, and it's playing more like a 5-5 game. Right, so maybe that's why. But then, then why not a 1-2-5 game? Look at me. I should be a home game consultant.
That's our next business. Home game consultation.
All right, so the stacks are deep, and it's playing more like a 5-5 game. Average stack is around $600. The action has been plentiful.
Okay.
That's a word you don't get at the end of the week very often.
I like that.
My stacks are plentiful. I would use that if I ever had plentiful stacks. But the players are pretty awful. Game started at 9 a.m., and right now it's around 1. He doesn't say whether it's 1 p.m. or 1 a.m.
Hey, listen. Would we be able to call you the plentiful stack ninja then? I was just curious about that before we move on to the hand. Scott, the plentiful stack ninja.
Oh, man.
Sorry, I just had to say that.
All right, so it's now onto the hand. There are two limps to the hero who has black queens.
Okay.
You're allowed to interject me.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think. He was saying it plays like a 5-5 game, so I'm just trying to, you know, I mean, I'm thinking about when I normally would play a 1-3, you know, and there's two limps, you know, so now if I was going to make it 9 or 10, now there's limps, I might make it 15, but if it's playing like a 5-5 game,
right,
you know, I'd make it like 25 or 30, so I don't know, maybe 20, 25, something like that.
I think that's perfect. I think you're right. I think in a normal game with these limpers, I'd probably make it 15 to go here, and then since the game plays a little bit bigger, I think I got to be at least 25, 30, something like that.
Okay. Yeah, that's why I was just confused. I was thinking of the 5-5 number and trying to figure out what I should do there, but about 25, I guess.
All right, that's exactly what our hero bets.
Oh, wow.
Folds around to the small blind who calls, and the two limpers fold. So her head's up in position.
Okay.
The small blind is a snug player.
Snug meaning tight, meaning only plays good hands?
Can you use that in a sentence, please?
Could you give me the words original meaning?
No, you can't say that. You have to say is the words origin Greek?
Oh, you have to ask the...
Apparently, yeah.
Oh.
Hey, I learned a lot about the spelling bee crap this week in Bad Words.
Oh, okay.
I thought it was in spelling bee. It was 8th grade.
Oh, man. I thought you could ask for that.
Stalagmite. That's going to, you know... Who can remember the word they went on the 8th grade spelling bee? Scott Lund. you're right. I thought you could just ask an open-ended question. So maybe you can. Because, you know, okay. You know, Hollywood always gets everything correct.
Yeah, they always get it correct.
So, yeah. I don't really know what he means by snug, but I guess it's, you know, tight, right?
Yeah, tight. So somebody who likes to play, he only plays pretty much good hands.
But, he goes on to say, but I've seen him defend quite wide from the small blind.
All right. So now he's just setting us up here is what he's doing. He's just trying to
contrast the personalities.
Yeah, yeah. He just wants us to have no idea what's going on, so we get it wrong, and he can laugh at us from home.
He's essentially playing Jekyll and Hyde.
Yeah, it's exactly what he's doing. It's not fair.
He says he's also shown down hands like King Deuce suited from early position.
Okay, so wait a minute.
So maybe there's a different definition of snug.
Yeah, I think snug. There's a flag on the field.
Maybe you meant to say smug. M and N are right next to each other on the keyboard, right?
15 yards for typo. Flag on the field. I want to go to the replay booth and see exactly what makes this guy a snug player. I'm sorry, this is not right. So we don't know what this guy could possibly have. How about that?
He's Jekyll or Hyde.
Okay. Let's
we're Heckle or Jekyll.
Let's proceed that we don't know what this guy has, and we have queens, and that's all that matters.
Right.
All right.
All right. So the flop comes 9 of diamonds, tray of hearts, deuce of hearts, and our villain leads for $40.
Hmm. All right. Well, here's the deal. To me, if he had a hand that was better than mine pre-flop, he would have re-raised. So, if he had a set, he may have bet out hoping that we had a bigger hand and would come over the top. Maybe he plays it that way, but I remember you saying something about these guys were terrible. So, if they're not good players...
They're terrible. Awful.
Oh, they're awful. Okay, so if they're
not
awful,
just awful, but they're pretty awful. So, right, they're not ugly.
So, they're
really good-looking bad.
Now, here's the deal. He told us this guy was snug. And then he told us they were pretty awful. So maybe pretty awful means they're awesome. So I don't know. You know, awful, awesome. I'm not really sure what to believe here now.
Bizarro hand of the week.
Yeah, it's bizarro hand of the week. But I'm going to go on a limb and say he didn't flop a set. And if he had a flush draw, he might bet that way. But if he does bet that way, I'm going to make him pay for it and re-raise here. So I'm going to make it like 100, 120, 140, something like that. Because I don't think we're beat here. I think we're ahead right now, and we're going to crush him. So I'm re-raising here.
Absolutely. 100 sounds perfect for me.
Okay.
Our hero calls.
Calls, huh?
And he says, I called here because I thought he could have a set or flush draw, and with deep stacks, I don't want to raise here just to have to fold. My hand is too strong.
I don't know, though. I don't know. If they're awful players and this guy's got a wide range of hands that he could defend with, you know, he could easily just have 10-9, and we're crushing him. You know, who knows? And if he has a draw, good. We're ahead of him. Good. Put all your money in on a draw. So, I don't know. If my hand, and he said my hand's strong, so if his hand's strong, let's make this guy pay, you know. And don't let him catch up, either.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, yeah, oh boy, it's going to be really tough for me to defend just calling here, but I mean, I guess, because really, the only hand we can put him on that really has his beat is a set, right? So a set would call the 25, not necessarily raise. Even nines probably wouldn't. They might, but, so it's possible. But other than that, I mean, he could have a wide range here that he feels comfortable betting into us.
Yeah, I mean, he could think we have ace-king, but then again, we really raised 25 with something like ace-king, maybe. But even so, if he thinks we missed, or, you know, and just is trying to take it down, if he thinks we missed, then why would he just bet into us to fold? Why not just, you know, check and raise, because he knows we're going to represent, you know what I mean, do a check raise. So there's some interesting things here. It feels like he hit the nine. And he just wants to see if we have anything, and he bet the right amount. But I would not have just called there.
And I would say if I'm the villain too, I'm going to make this bet with a flush draw because I want to set the price. And usually the donk bet does set the price for a lot of players. You know, they're like, they're so confused. Why are you betting into me? All right, $40. I guess I'll call. Which happens here. I'm not, you know, picking on her here yet. We'll see how the hand plays out. But I would rather do that if I've got, you know, $60 in the pot. Let's bet 40 and then. Let me control the action with a flush draw because it's going to be harder for you to put me on a flush if it hits, right?
Right.
Oh, I'd rather do that than have you shove on me or something bigger and then lose control of the hand. And then when the flush gets there, not get paid off, right?
Right.
So yeah, I think it's entirely possible to flush draws in his range, too. And probably maybe what about a nine of hearts kind of thing, you know?
Oh, yeah. 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 So
you know,
here...
10-9 of hearts or something, and... So then it's not even really a setting up for the flush. It's, you know, a semi-bluff.
Yeah. And so I think we want to make them pay for these. You don't want
well, yeah, so I guess what I was getting with that is that, all right, so if we're just going to call here, then I think we need to see what happens. We almost need to wait and see if a heart comes, you know, and see what happens to the action. If he keeps betting strong, then all right, I'm going to give him credit for the heart. If not, if he slows down, then check behind and then call any kind of reasonable bet. But we're losing so much value, I think, in our hand, aren't we, by just calling here and then...
I think so.
And then checking behind on the river, if that's... I mean, on the turn, if that happens, and then getting our bet on the river that we may or may not get called. So I think it's a tough thing to do, to call. I think you're giving up control.
Yeah, absolutely. The other thing, too, is you're looking to make money on these hands, and you're looking for that exact type of flop where... There's no straight yet, there's no flush yet, and they're all unders. This is what you were hoping for, and now you're just going to let him dictate? You took control of this hand, and he tried to steal it back. I think you need to take the control back. And, you know, okay, so you might have to get your stack in, but you got an overpair. No redraw, obviously, but you got an overpair, and this guy clearly defends with all... But I don't think he's defending with 9 tray or 9 deuce or tray deuce. Not for $25. So I think that we're ahead, and we really need to make this guy pay for the move he just made.
All right. The turn is the deuce of diamonds. So our board now is nine of diamonds, tray of hearts, deuce of diamonds. And now the villain checks to us.
Yeah. See, now this is big because that deuce couldn't have helped him, really. If anything, it helps us in case he somehow had 9-3 or if he had 10-9, a 10 comes on the river and he makes two pair, our two pair is still better. So it helps us. This does not hurt us. And by him checking, that if he had something that was not a draw or if he had just a 9 and he's worried that you're having him beat, he would check there. So I think we're ahead. I think we need to put the hammer down now before he does hit that draw or hits that nine again or whatever, or makes his pocket eights and, you know, or something like that, and rivers a set on us or a boat on us. So I think we need to make this guy pay. I don't think there's any hand that he has a deuce in his hand with. He couldn't. I don't think he could. So that deuce did not help him. It helped
really
us.
At this point, the only thing I'm worried about is his pocket nines. And now that, you know, he let out to protect his hand against the flush, now he's got his boats, and now he's going to check and make us believe that he was making a stab at the pot. And, oh, you caught me. But that's the only hand at this point I'm worried about.
Yeah, there's no way that, I mean, if he has a boat there and we're coming along, he has to put us on a pair over that nine. And so he's going to think that by betting, you know, if he checks here, you know, there's no way, if he knows that we're ahead and he has pocket nines, he's betting into us again. There's no way he's checking that boat now. So I just think he has a random nine and we're ahead and we need to really...
I would say there's no reason he wouldn't check that. I mean, I would totally check it here at this point to confuse you, but that would be the only reason.
But you're losing value on your full house then when you know somebody has an overpair or can't
fold. You're losing value in the sense that you're hoping that you're setting up the ruse that you were donk betting and you missed and now, and hopefully that induces your opponent to bet either here or on the river. Hopefully he bets here and then you just call and then you can come out firing and get on the river and really confuse him. If he checks behind, then you make your bet on the river, and yeah, you probably could lose some value. So yeah, it's a gamble, but it could pay off. Well, I mean, I don't think it's automatically losing value.
Just really quickly, I want to say, if we check and he bets and we call and we bet the river, that is so fishy that, you know, you should work for Long John Silver's. Okay, there is no way somebody is going to call you again on the river now that you've done that. It's so transparent.
Well, right, exactly. So that's the gamble you're making, is that you're checking now, hoping that he'll put a bet in on the turn, which you can call, and maybe do your whole Hollywooding, and then, you know, the heart doesn't get on the river, so you take another risk and check, and he makes a value bet that you crush. So yeah, it's a gamble. I mean, really, what you have to, as a player, you have to evaluate what's the best way of getting money out of your opponent. And obviously, this is a home game, so these guys know each other, I would think, right? So in that sense, maybe you know that this guy, once you gear down, is going to keep the pedal in the metal, and then you're going to get paid off. And if you don't think the player's going to do that, then obviously, yeah, you would never check here. Oh, but we don't know the history, so.
Congratulations, you have just made the thinnest argument in poker history for checking there. No, really, though, I just think that if you were convinced as a player that I had kings or aces, and we were playing No Limit Hold'em, and you boated up there, I think that you would bet it.
Oh, well, now you're changing it. If I'm convinced that you have queens and kings,
well, that's what I think this guy thinks. I think this guy's thinking that now.
How can you be convinced of that? Well, certainly, I put that in your range.
Yeah, so why would you not want to value that?
Automatically assume that you've got a monster that, you know, that you didn't raise us on the... I mean, why would you raise with that on the flop? I mean, you and I would have, but our hero didn't. So now, I don't think it's really likely for him to imagine that we have a monster. Like,
okay.
We do.
So what hand does he put us on, then, that...
It could be
that we would check and think he would bet.
Ace 10, king, queen, some kind of weird combination like that. That
so no hand, no draw, no pair, nothing is going to bet on us.
Pair draws? I mean, come on. It's 9 straight deuce, and the guys in the small blind called a big bet. You know, I mean, it's hard to put him on 9-3 deuce. So, you know, if I got king, queen there, yeah, I think I'm still alive. And there's probably a good possibility the guy is bluffing, and if not, he's got a 9, and I could catch up with him. I'm not going to say I'm going to do that all day long, but for $40, that's probably what I was going to bet anyhow, right?
Okay, so here's the reason. I think you just answered your own question why you wouldn't check the turn now. If we're betting 40 out into our hero, and the hero calls, he's not calling with anything but overpairs or draws. So right. Now when the turn gets there, you are not going to check and let him check behind and get that draw for free in the end. And if he has an overpair, you've got
to. But it's not a draw at that point if we have nines. If we have the boat, it's not a draw. There's no draw left out there.
Not us, the hero. See, I'm talking about the villain's point of view now. That's why the villain would not check.
Right, yeah, but as a villain, I'm not worried about them catching up at this point.
Well, because of the boat?
If I have a boat. See, yeah, this is the problem is we're already making these assumptions about
the boat. It gets so complicated.
Exactly. But yeah, no, if I have the boat, then yeah, I want him to catch up. Not catch up, I want him to...
To hit the flush.
I mean, I'm not... Let me back up. I want to give him a shot to not catch up. you know, I don't want him to chase him away because I got the vote now. So, necessarily.
Right. In other words, you want him to make a flush if he's going for a flush, or straight if he's going for straight.
Really, I don't care about that. I just want him to feel like I'm weak and feel like he's emboldened now to make a play at the pot again.
I think if I continue to bet,
then there's a chance we might lose him. Or he's only going to call our bet, which might not be as lucrative.
All right. Well, we've seen both sides of it, I guess. I mean, I think my way might make more money for him, but you never know.
Probably does.
Yep. For the villain. I'm here. We're talking about the villain now. We're trying to make the villain money. We're supposed to be analyzing the heroes.
Justin's the whole is like, hey guys, I've got a hand here.
Hello, I'm over here with Pocket
Queens. How about analyzing my hand?
I think we're ahead. And I'm going to make this guy pay for checking.
All right. Hero decides to check. And he says, I elect to check it back strictly for pot control. Also, continuing with my flop lead, he's never folding any of his range here. He could have turned a boat and trying to trap. So, yeah, I guess my problem with that is he's never folding any of his range here. There's so much more of his range that's not the boat. And therefore, we're giving up value, right?
Yeah.
You know, if he's never going to fold, let's bet the $50, get the 50 bucks out of him.
Yeah, why not bet?
And if he's got the boat, great. You know, because here at this point, I mean, is the villain really going to check raise us now? Because that's going to shut down the hand, isn't it?
Yeah, and the other thing, too, is I'm confused because he said, continuing with my flop lead. He didn't lead the flop, the villain did. So is he going to, like, switch it up at the end of his hand and say, I was the villain again? Are we getting one of those hands again?
I don't believe we are.
All right, so I don't think we led at the flop. So that doesn't tell me that he would not fold. He's the one that led at the flop.
Yeah.
So I don't know why what rule.
Maybe you meant pre-flop.
Maybe. So anyway, I think that the check is a bad play. If this guy bet out with the draw like you said he could, then we're giving him a free card to hit the flush or the straight in case he's playing some weird combination, which I doubt. But and then also, if he has a 9, you're giving him a chance to hit another 9, you know, for free. And then
here's the thing. Even if he has a 9, if he's got the boat here and he is trying to trap us, I don't think this player – I guess he says the players are pretty awful, maybe. But I don't think do you think the villain is going to check raise at this point?
No.
He's just going to call your bet, right? Right. And then he's going to put out a river bet, and then at that point you can evaluate whether you want to or not. So I don't see any risk here in betting at this point at all.
Yeah, I don't see him raising you. Yeah, I knew.
Because that shuts down the hand, right? Because now he's like, okay, you bet into me, and then you checked. Ho, all right. Score one for you. You pulled the wool over my eyes. I fold. Yeah. And the hand shut down. So why would he do that, right?
Right.
You're just going to call, and then you're going to bet the river, hope you get some value on the river.
Absolutely.
So I'm not worried about anything at this point, and there's so many more hands that he has that we crush, so I'm going to get a bet in here and make him call. And if he's not going to call here, he's not going to call on the river. And if he calls on the river, then it's probably because he caught up and beat us. So.
Yeah.
I think this is a value street for us, and we're missing it by checking.
Absolutely, and you kind of want to shut down if you know what I mean. You want to be able to win. This is a pretty big pot.
Well, we do. Yeah. I don't think he does, and no. He doesn't want to shut down.
No, exactly.
And that's all right. Well, the river pairs the 9, so our final board is 9 of diamonds, tray of hearts, deuce of hearts, deuce of diamonds, unaffiliated 9. And the villain bets 150.
Yeah, that's not good.
See, this is what we kind of thought, right?
Yeah, this guy's got 9-10, ace 9. There's no other way. I mean, unless he missed a hard draw or something, and he knows he can't win. But even that, I mean, he's just not going to get you to fold. You know,
I think the other hand he could have an ace, and now he's thinking, hey, there's two pair on board, and my ace is going to play.
Yeah, 150 though.
So risky.
You want to show? Oh yeah, that that's down.
But how much do we have in the pot now? I mean, 150 is pretty substantial, right?
Yeah, I mean, if you had an ace, I think you would probably check call.
It's about $100 in the pot, so that's definitely more than the pot.
That's a lot of money. I mean, it could be one of those things where he's trying to steal, but with an ace, if he's hoping that his ace is good, he's not going to bet. He's going to hope to call something reasonable on the end instead of betting 150. So he either missed it completely, or he's convinced we have an overpair and he hit that third nine. It feels like he hit that third nine to bet that much. You can't be betting that much unless he's bluffing. But if we're calling the whole way, why would we fold now? Since nothing got there.
Well, we did, and we checked on the turn. This is what's confusing about this hand now, I think. I mean, I don't know what he can put us on at this point. Yeah. You know, because he checked the turn, and we checked behind. So, I mean, we could be on a draw, we could be on air, we could be on all kinds of stuff. So the 150 to me screams bluff bet here, particularly in a hand where players are pretty awful.
Yeah. I
doesn't mean I want to pay the 150 to find out if I'm right, but
it screams to me that he hit the 9. because here's the deal. He bets
you would bet
40,
150 with a nine?
Like three nines?
More than the pot?
I've now made a full house.
Right, but more than the pot you're going
to
bet?
Well, if he doesn't believe us. I mean, to me, it seems like
he's
convinced
not giving
that
us any indication that he doesn't believe us. He's giving us every indication that he had a decent hand to raise with pre-flop, a hand that was okay to call with on the flop, and then a hand that he didn't had any confidence in betting the turn. I can't put our hero on, as a villain, I can't put our hero on a hand that he's confident in. So if I've got that boat, I'm going to get paid off. I'm going to bet 50 here and get paid off. I'm not going to bet 150 and scare him away.
Well, you even said yourself that if he had the boat already with pocket nines, he could have checked the trap. So now he's got a comp. Maybe he made quads. Who knows? And he's hoping this guy's got, you know, aces and not, you know, or something, and not thinking that we have, because there's two nines and two twos on the board. You know what I mean? I think there are hands that he has here that would bet that way, thinking that we are bluffing, and we're not. We've hit that third nine for the full house. You know, I don't know. I feel like we're beat, though. Because the whole way I was thinking this guy's got a nine. And now that another nine comes, I'm going to believe he doesn't because of how much he bet. I believed he had a nine when I was playing this hand. So I think that
let's not change our thinking on what we think he has based on the bet. I'm just saying, with the bet, it seems so weird that player with a monster like that thinks he's going to get called off by way overbetting the pot.
Well, let's be fair. It's only $20 over the pot. It was 50, 25, 25 to raise, so that's 50. 80 more is 130. And to mention that there were probably blinds in there, okay, too. They had limpers, right. So he's probably betting the pot. So, I mean, it's not that big of a deal of a bet. Sure. But, like I said, I'm just convinced that he had a nine, so that other nine gives him a boat in my mind. I think I can lay it down. I've only lost 40. I checked behind on the, you know, I've lost 65, I guess. But if I had 600 and lost 10% of my stack and I got sucked out on, and I believe this guy's beating me now. I really do. I believe he had a nine the whole way, so that's
what. Yeah, if you're worried about pot control, this is the ultimate pot control at this point.
Yeah, just let it go.
You know? Yeah. And calling 150 is not pot control, so I'm not saying that's the reason to do it, but obviously Justin was a little skittish here on the turn, and so he's probably got reason to be skittish on the river now, and now he's going to make a hero call.
See, if we had laid the hammer down on the turn for 100 or so, I think he's folding. I mean, unless he's, you know, got quads now. I mean, if he had the boat, he's not folding. But at that point, he might have shoved, and then we would have gotten our answer too for 100.
Or we bet big, he calls, and then he shoves now, and then we could easily fold, right?
Easily fold, yeah. I think 100 on the turn was the bet. 100, 120, something.
And that
like
would
that.
Save us 50 bucks if we're wrong, because we're going to call 150 here now.
Yeah. Because he would have either re-raised us with a boat, and we would have folded, or he would have called and shoved on the river. If he checks on the river, we check behind and say, hey, you know what? You're kind of tricky. Let's see what you got. And then so maybe you didn't maximize it, but you got 100 on the turn rather than zero and then losing 150 on the river for long. So I think we get this guy out of the hand on the turn if we bet a significant amount. And I think now we've lost. I think we let the guy catch up for free. That's what I think.
Okay.
Could be wrong.
All right. Our hero tank calls, he says.
Oh, that's interesting.
That means they called in one of those awesome tanks that we can rent.
I was going to say, this has got to be a record for the show for how many times we've mentioned tank on the show.
We haven't got the Frank the Tank yet.
I was just going to say that. We're streaking. Streaking!
Who's we? Everybody! All kinds of people! All right, so we tank call. He says, the heart's missed. I thought if he had a nine, he would have bet the flop as well, which he says he did bet the
he
flop.
He did bet the flop.
Bet the turn.
That's why, yeah, the turn. Okay. Yeah, the turn as well. Yeah.
I think we're a little, we got type lag here in this handling.
Okay.
Villain turns over the ace nine of hearts.
Whoa. Nut flush draw, top pair, top kicker, and then misses. Now, why didn't he bet the turn? Why would this guy check the turn with two pair and the nut flush draw?
I'm going to have to go with what Justin was saying, pot control. They're both playing pot control at the same time.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe that's right. Wow.
Because, I mean, again, that's the problem when you're out of position and you take the lead in the hand, because then you got to fire the three bullets, right?
Yeah.
You know, I think, to be honest, ace-nine, I'd be comfortable firing his three bullets because I got the nine. It's not like I'm just on a flush draw. And so I would probably put that bet in. And so now what's interesting now, knowing his hand, if the villain did bet the turn, obviously by Justin's analysis, he's going to just call whatever that bet is.
Yeah.
Pot control, right?
Yeah.
And then there's more in the pot at that point, so then the villain can bet more on the end and get more out of it. So, yeah, I think the villain lost some value there.
Yeah.
Just got a little skittish about having to fire three bullets.
Right, because...
better than nine.
And by our call on the flop, he could be thinking we had an overpair, and that deuce kind of hurts us. And that's why he checked, hoping to get, you know, an easy way to get to the river for that heart flush or boat up, so... That's got to be it. That's got to be what he was thinking, that we had a bigger pair than his, was skittish about the call, and checked behind for pot control, and then on the river got lucky. Not really lucky, because the nine was one of the outs, but he also had the flush draw and an ace in this instance, too. So he had a lot of outs. So, yeah. Well, so I guess if I had that hand, I would bet 150. All right, that seems about right. It's about the pot.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, you got on the call, so, I mean, hey. Yeah, not complaining.
Man, unbelievable. All right, another good show. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.